this conversation between Al Lopez and Walter Langford in Al's home in Tampa on January 10th, 1985. Al, what do you see as the principal differences between Major League Baseball prior to 1940 and the present time?
It hasn't been that much of a change, but I think the principal thing that I see now is that the boys are getting bigger, the kids are getting bigger, and they're swinging much harder. They're using lighter bats, and there's more strikeouts now than there used to be. We used to make more of an effort to make contact with the ball than they do now. The catchers, for some reason or other, the pass ball situation, me being a catcher, notice that more than the ordinary player, but to me it's ridiculous the way the pass ball situation is concerning catching.
Right.
And I don't see why it should be.
Do catchers throw out as high a percentage of base stealers as they did in the old days?
Well, that's another change that's occurred in baseball. No, they didn't used to try to steal as much as they do now.
Okay, now is the stealing more the fault of the catcher or the pitcher?
Well, it's a composite of three things. I think there's more speed now in baseball.
Yeah.
They concentrate more on speed than they did in the olden days. And the other is the pitching. The kids are taller and they have to, it takes maybe a couple of two or three seconds more, a couple of three or four steps more for them to be able to deliver the ball than they did in the olden days with the shorter guys and the short arm pitchers. And they're going to have to do something about the pitcher's windup. I don't think it's the catcher's fault in most cases. I think that although there's a couple of fellas in baseball, Carter does it, and there's a couple of catchers that are throws those guys out, and they position themselves in good position to be able to get the ball quick, like the Miami quarterback, Marino, that has a quick release.
Yep.
That's a big thing in throwing guys out. You can't wind up to throw the ball, and in both catching and pitching.
A lot of the old-timers I've talked to who knew you and played with you, like Glenn Wright and Babe Herman and others, said that was one thing you had was the quick release.
Well, yeah, I was kind of quick back then. I was small, but I'm not bragging, but I was a little bit on the quicker side than most of the bigger guys.
Yeah, that figures. What do you feel about the designated hitter?
Well, again, there's another change in baseball that happened. Personally, I think it takes a lot away from managing, managing part about the game. The other thing is I really haven't gone into it, the percentage of how much increases is there in the scoring of runs. I haven't gone into that percentage, but
yeah,
I don't see that much difference in the scoring and personally, if I was managing, I'd like to be able to manage a little more than you do with the DH hitter.
Now, the DH hadn't come in when you quit managing, had it?
That's right.
Yeah, just after you stopped managing, very shortly it came in. Yeah. What about artificial surfaces?
Well, I think it's a great advantage to the hitters. There's no question about it.
And to the management.
Yeah.
Fewer rainouts.
That's right. It's a great advantage for the hitting.
Oh,
I rather see just a regular turf. And I think a lot of the players would too.
I think most of them would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And free agency.
Free agency, I think it was a terrible thing. Whoever that judge made that decision, I guess he knows law, but I think it hurt baseball.
I do too. And going out of that, today's salaries.
Well, again, I don't blame the players for getting all they can, and if it's the cause of it is management themselves. They have nobody to blame but themselves, and
right.
I think it's going to get worse instead of better. I actually think that it's going to get worse.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to predict the divisional winners in this upcoming season.
No, I don't. I don't. I don't see. I'm not that far ahead, and there's been quite a few changes. But one thing that disappointed me last year was the White Sox. I thought the White Sox would finish a lot higher. They had great pitching, and the thing that they were strong at was the thing that failed them. Yeah. It was the pitching. And I hope they have a better year.
Well, the hitting failed them too. Their team batting average dropped quite a bit.
But I thought that even the pitching would hold up. Because they had real strong pitching, and I thought that it would hold up.
Yeah. I think, in fact, I never saw any place where anybody picked anybody other than the White Sox to finish first last year, and they were the biggest disappointment of the season.
I think so. Yeah.
And they were. They were my favorite team from the day I hit Notre Dame as a freshman in 1926,
right?
Until I left South Bend a few years ago. Now, what about further expansion in both leagues? You see that coming in the next few years?
I think so. I think that eventually they'll have to expand both in baseball and football. I think there are larger cities that want football and they want baseball I don't see why not. I think that it should be. They have one thing that's right now it's something they have to straighten out. Is the American League has two more clubs than the National League,
right?
And it's
got to be evened up.
Yeah, and it's the American League schedule is all screwed up on account of that, and they're going to have to do something about that. I hope they expand pretty soon.
Then they would have to expand either by just two teams into the National League or. Two in the American and four in the National to even them off again.
That would be asking too much, because where are you going to get the players to furnish six teams?
Yeah.
The thing that I think, if they can, is to get two more teams in the National League and then play interleague baseball.
You're talking. You think that Tampa is the number one probability for an expansion team?
I think so. I think Tampa Bay and Denver, I think, are... Mm-hmm. Real, real good logical choice.
Where would they play in Tampa? Is the stadium where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play, is that suitable for baseball?
Oh, perfect.
Is it?
A perfect location, yes.
And it seats
They have a
16,
field there. They named it after me, Al Lopez Field.
Yeah.
It's not large enough, their plans are to build a big stadium there. And it would be a perfect location because it's centrally located for the whole Bay Area. And also the surrounding towns around Tampa.
What about the campaign of people in St. Petersburg to get it over there?
Well, I don't blame St. Pete for trying to get a stadium right away. I think that what they had in mind was the actual that Tampa beat them to football by building a stadium ahead of time, which Tampa did, and then they finally eventually came up with a franchise here, and they're trying to get a baseball. I don't blame St. Pete at all, but I think that the ideal location is Tampa.
And neither one is so far from the other, but what they could do.
No, it's
all one big.
That's right.
I would like to say happy family, maybe. Maybe
right
not
now,
too happy
not.
Right now. I see in recent years a growing number of Hispanic players in the major leagues, particularly from the Dominican Republic. After I retired from Notre Dame, I lived and worked in the Dominican Republic for 3 years running a private foundation, and I saw a lot of the Winter League games over there and so forth, and they really are baseball crazy. But why don't we get more players in the majors out of Mexico, for instance?
Well, Mexico has their own league, I don't know, for some reason or other, they don't produce like the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Mexico has leagues that are the regular season, as you say, and also a winter league.
That's right. They have a winter league also. But you've got to give the Dominican Republic a lot of credit. They've done a tremendous job. Before the Dominican Republic, it was used to be Cuba. Cuba still has a lot of good players. And then Puerto Rico came along pretty good.
Right.
But now the Dominican Republic, by far, is producing a lot more players than any other of those.
If we could open up relations with Cuba sometime soon, do you feel there'd be a dozen or two ball players
to
come up out of Cuba?
I would think so. They're very enthusiastic over there about baseball, and they were. I know I played some games over there both before. Mm-hmm. Before I got to the majors, I was over there once, and then I was over there twice with the Brooklyn Ball Club. And once with the All-Stars, and we had tremendous success.
Oh yes,
now, and they had some good players.
You must have played with, or certainly against, old Dolph Luque.
I caught him at Brooklyn, and then he went to the Giants.
Yeah.
To me, he was a great pitcher.
Yeah, everyone said
I learned that. A lot from catching him. I was just breaking into the big leagues when he was at Brooklyn.
Yeah. Now, if I remember, you're on the Veterans Committee for the election of people to the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Is there any chance, tell me this, do they elect many or very many after they have died?
Oh yes, yeah. There's been a number of players that have been selected after they have been, they've been dead.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them, that's what the Veterans Committee is all about, is to select the players that are passed away, or else players that they're still living. A fellow like Glenn Wright, now that you mentioned a little while ago, I thought he was a great player.
Certainly.
And his name has been brought up a number of times. Yeah. And Babe Grummer is another one.
I talked to both of them.
Yeah.
And Glenn died, you know.
I heard that. That's a shame, because he was a good friend of mine.
Yes.
A great player.
Yeah, I talked to him over 2 years ago. He was in pretty good shape then out in Fresno, but months after that, had a letter from his son saying that he had had a stroke, and they brought him back to Kansas.
Oh, is that right?
He was living near his son, and that's where he died. And I've talked two or three times with Babe Herman, and they're good possibilities, and others like Archie Vaughn. And
Archie Vaughn, I ruled with him, great player.
Does the Veterans Committee have a restriction that they can only elect two in 1 year?
That's right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think that if you start getting too many in, you're going to cheapen the thing.
Well, that's true.
It should be a real selective. It's quite an organization, and it should be a very selective thing.
On the other hand, if there are still a number of old timers that are worthy, and newer ones are constantly becoming eligible as time moves on, it sort of tends to squeeze out.
You'd be surprised if some fellows that you might think, or a lot of people think, that they should be in, that they've been voted on over there, that they didn't get, because you have to get a two-thirds majority vote. That didn't get in. You'd be surprised how many. The three fellows that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Their names have been Babe Herman, Glenn Wright, Archie Vaughn were supported, but they didn't get the two-thirds majority. And you'd be surprised how many fellows go through that. And the thing that they try to do is to keep the thing as exclusive as possible. I'll tell you a fellow like George Kell, who got in last year. George was never mentioned, and I think it was the first time that he was mentioned.
Hmm.
He was voted in right away.
Yeah.
Was never mentioned before. But we go through all the list of the players that are eligible to be in. And they try to select the best two nominees that they possibly can.
Yeah. Now, two more things. Now that Joe Cronin has died, have they selected a new chairman?
Not yet. Not that I've heard of. I think they're going to probably bring it up in the next meeting.
You could very well be the guy.
I hope not. That's too much work for me. I just want to relax. And
all right. Now,
be one of the members.
It seems to me that I remember that in several seasons, the Old Timers Committee has selected one player and one non-player, like Happy Chandler or something. Some people say there ought to be a separate category for former managers, executives, commissioners, and so forth, so that the committee could choose its two players every year rather than.
Well, I think it is. I think the rule is that you can choose two players
and another. That's good.
Non-official, like Stoneham or Yawkey was selected, and two players can be selected, and an umpire or an official can be selected.
Now, this intrigued me, Al. In the year 1930. The whole National League averaged out, hit over 300. I think six of the eight teams batted over 300, up to 319 and so forth. And if you averaged out, everybody in the league, pitchers, pinch hitters, utility players, everybody averaged over 300. And in this past season, it averaged in the National League 255. That's a difference of about 50 points that they've dropped. There are several possible reasons for that, I guess, but what would you think it is mostly? Is hitting for average a lost art? Like you say, they swing for the fences now, and that's bound to reduce contact and elevate strikeouts and everything. Or are today's pitchers that much better, which I kind of doubt. But maybe the effectiveness of relief pitching has accounted for it, or the expansion has lowered the quality overall in the players. Or does the rise of other pro sports, football, basketball, and all of the other sports that are taking a lot of the athletes nowadays, where that wasn't true in the 20s and 30s. Got any thoughts on that?
Yes, I can tell you from my experience that in 1930, when I first came up, we had a real good ball to hit at, and that's a year that Bill Terry led the league with 401.
Yep.
Babe Herman hit, I think, 393.
393, I think, yeah.
I think, and like you say, that most of the clubs were good hitting teams.
Mm-hmm.
The following year, I think McGraw complained about the ball being too lively because he was playing in the polo grounds, and
mm-hmm.
the polo grounds, as you know, down the lines were very, very short, 250 feet or something like that.
That's right.
And most anybody could hit a ball over there.
Pop flat.
And McGraw complained that you couldn't manage any teams with a ball being so lively that it would go out of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in the National League, they changed the ball considerably. They deadened the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And it hurt. Well, it hurt me. I hit 309 and I went to 275 or something like that. It hurt Hack Wilson, who had hit 54 home runs and drove in about 190 runs in either 29 or 1930. He went down to, I think,
way down. Yeah.
And finally they got rid of him. Of course, he hit his ball mostly in right center and right center. But the ball had a lot to do with it because I was talking to Bill Terry about this myself, you know, how I thought it affected. And he says, well, I still hit 340 something the following year, Al. I said, yeah, Bill.
60 points less.
He and Hafey and Bottomley finished practically in a tie,
mm-hmm.
and Hafey won it by percentage points, was the leader that year. But I said, but you forget that the year before you hit 401, which you dropped about 60 points.
That's right.
But the 300 hitter went down to 270, which, you know, a lot of people say, well, look, you're not a 300 hitter anymore. But that's getting away from it. The ball had a lot to do with it,
mm-hmm.
in that decline that happened in the early 30s.
Yeah.
Then they start bringing back the ball back, and now I think the ball is livelier than ever.
I believe you're right.
I think the ball is livelier. Yeah. But not getting away from what that you're talking about, the difference. In those days, we played all-day games.
Yeah.
And the pitcher that started practically had to pace himself, like a racehorse would have to pace himself to go a mile and a quarter or a mile and an eighth. And he wouldn't let out as much like they do today. Today
mm-hmm.
those pitchers go out and it's a night, which helps the pitcher. It's cooler than it was in those days,
yeah.
And it's a great advantage to the pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're big, strong kids. They throw hard, and they go out there for six or seven innings. And today, the big part of the game is the bullpen, which you brought up yourself. The bullpen has a lot to do with in those days. We had some guys in the bullpen that they weren't especially bullpen pitchers. They were guys that would come in to relieve after the pitcher got in trouble or after they scored four or five runs.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy like Burley Grimes now, he would go out there and he'd beat you 6-5 or 5-4 or 2-1, whatever he had to do, he did it.
Yeah.
And Lukey was the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Dizzy Dean, they can't tell me that any pitchers today are greater than Dizzy Dean or Carl Hubbell or Dazzy Vance or Walter Johnson.
No way.
Those guys were great. Not that these guys are bad.
No.
They're great pitchers. But we had just as great of pitchers in those days as they have now.
You sure did. All right. Could you name and maybe even rank the best half dozen managers you saw in your playing days in the major leagues?
let me see, I can name you one fellow that I admired that I thought was a great guy, and I thought he was the one that brought in more into the hit and run and going to the opposite field, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, was John McGraw, who had great success. I never played in the American League in those days, yeah. But I played against John McGraw, and I admired him very much. I thought he was a great manager. He knew what he needed for his club to be a good club, and he went out and got it. Mm-hmm. In those days, you could trade with the lower clubs, yeah. Cincinnati and Philadelphia and clubs like that.
That's another drawback of the free agency and the long-term contracts and guaranteed contracts. It has reduced the possibilities of trading.
Well, I think that long-term contract hurts baseball.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
But anyway, now going back to managers, I was fortunate enough that I played under five managers, and they're all in the Hall of Fame, all five managers that I played for. Now, I think Boudreau was not in the Hall of Fame for his managerial, but I learned yeah. something from Lou. I played under him. He's in the big leagues. I played at Cleveland 1 year for him. I played under Casey Stengel twice, mm-hmm. both in Brooklyn and Boston. He's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Bill McKechnie was another one that I learned an awful lot
oh,
from.
Yeah.
He's in the Hall of Fame. Frank Frisch is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Those maybe both. He could be in either way,
yeah.
player or a manager.
Frank
yeah.
Frisch was in the Hall of Fame. And those fellows.
And John McGraw.
John McGraw I didn't play for, but I admired him very much.
You played a little bit for
Wilbert
Robinson.
Well, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I forgot him, I'm sorry. But he was my first manager, and he was a great guy to manage for. I mean, to play for.
Play for, that's what they all said. Yeah. Yeah. There were some good ones. Were you with Cleveland as a coach in 48?
I was more to try to help out. McKechnie was the one that asked me. McKechnie was there as a coach, and he was the one that I think asked me if I could.
Your playing days ended in 47, huh?
In 47, the big leagues. And I went to manage the Indianapolis 48, 49, and 50.
Uh-huh. So you really weren't there when they won the pennant as an active coach in 48?
No, they won it in 48.
Yeah. All right. Seems to me it is a sort of a shame that Teller couldn't have won a game in that 48 series, that first game especially.
Yeah, I saw that game. I was in Boston.
It was
a real fine ball game.
Oh, yeah.
He got beat 1-0 that game.
Would you figure that Macy was out at second base?
Well, again, this is one of those things that it's hard to call him from the stands.
Well, Harger tells me he's got photographs that prove it.
Yeah. I was in the stands and I saw and I knew the play.
Yeah.
I knew the play because I had been with Cleveland before the year before.
Right.
And they practiced that play. And
that's what Harger said.
And Feller and Lemon both could pull the play because they were quick and they knew the play. It was a count play. They counted, you know, and they turned around and wheeled and throw. And I was looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened, but for me to call it, I could call it from the stands. I was sitting way up in the stands.
Well, even if he had been out and called out, you never know who would have won the game eventually. In 54, when everybody thought that Cleveland, with this great season record and everything else, and great pitching, and balanced ball club, was going to win the World Series, and they had that unhappy experience of losing four straight, I figure it wouldn't have taken too awfully much for Cleveland to have won that one.
Well, I think we would have had a good chance if
you'd gotten that first game.
Yeah. You see, sports is funny. You get streaks at golf, tennis, everything goes to a streak that everything you do goes right for you. Sometimes you don't even hit the ball correctly and it goes right for you.
Momentum.
And that year, we won 111 ball games. It's a record right now.
It is. Yeah.
I don't recall that we lost more than two games at any one time throughout the 154 season that year.
Mm-hmm.
Not well, we're two games in a row. Everything we did was just going perfect. We beat the Red Sox at home in their home in Fenway Park 11 times out of 13. We had two ties. We played 11 games. We played 13 games. We won 11 and lost one in Fenway Park. And we lost two to the Red Sox, and they were first division ball club. They finished fourth that year. Everything that we did was perfect. Then we went into the series, and it looked like everything that we did it just went wrong. I think that if we'd have started the ball, now looking back, if we'd have started the series in Cleveland, I think we'd have won the first two ball games. because Pete Wirtz's ball would have been a home run.
Oh, yeah.
Way out of the ballpark in Cleveland, we would have won the ball. And those things turn around, and you don't know. But the Giants were a good ball club. They played. Yeah, they were a better ball club than that you're giving credit for. They were pretty good.
That is true. But yeah. It turned series, short series like that can turn on. So. Few things.
That's right.
Who could have figured that Dusty Rhodes would have that kind of a series?
I said, well, it happens in every World Series. Yeah. Every time that you play in a series, you see somebody that on the expect that comes out and yeah. shines.
Yeah. Like Pepper Martin and
right.
There he was. In the 59 series, if Lawler had scored on that drive in the eighth inning, I think it was, in the second game. The Sox would have had a couple of men on and nobody out. I think they could have gone on and...
Well, again, there was a turning point that if he hadn't scored, even if he'd have stayed at third base, but I give the Los Angeles club credit. They made two perfect relays that people
right.
didn't realize that.
That's right.
I forgot the boy that was playing left field for Los Angeles. Used to play for the Cardinals. Got a real perfect bounce from the wall and relayed it to the shortstop, and the shortstop threw the home plate a perfect throw, and Lala was out easy.
Yeah.
But even if he hadn't gone, he stayed there, would have had two men on and nobody out.
Yeah.
It might have been a different ballgame. We were ahead at the time
that
it happened.
And of course, good old Sherem, great as he was pretty slow on those.
He was a little bit slow, but yeah.
And he had cut pretty wide around third base. I remember sitting in the stands one night, and it was the ninth inning, this game was tied, bottom of the ninth. Lawler was on first base with two out, and Goodman came up. And I said, boy, he's got to hit it to that longest spot in the right center field for Lawler to have any chance to score. And by God, he hit it right there, and Lawler scored.
Is that right?
Yeah. How frustrating was it to manage in Cleveland and Chicago all those years from 51 on through 65? Finish second about 10 times, most of them behind the Yankees.
Well, it was no frustration at all. I was very fortunate. I had good people to work for, and I had good ball players to play for me, and people that I got along with. And I think that's the main principle of a good ball club is to have cooperation.
Sure.
Players that are satisfied, not complaining about everything.
Mm-hmm.
To have people that really want to play the game and go out and give you all they got. I think that's a big part of it. And I had no frustration. I had winning ball clubs.
Sure.
I had good ball clubs to work with, and I had good management to work with.
That point you make about players being satisfied and happy and playing well together, I don't think that exists to the same degree these days. They're all businessmen.
Well, I think this is a very important part in any ball club.
Yeah.
If you can keep your players in the proper spirit to go out in unity, it means an awful lot in teams. I mean, it don't make any difference whether it's baseball or basketball or football.
Any team.
You've got to give everybody to give every effort they can.
And I don't think
I try to stay away from those type of guys that were troublemakers or something like that. I try to stay away from them.
Sure. But it just figures that there can't be as much togetherness these days. They travel by plane rather than on a train, and they don't spend as much time together. They play night games rather than day games, and I think there's...
I tell you, when they complain about they get tired by going from the coast to say Boston or something like that by plane. If they'd have gone through what the older players went through, going from St. Louis to New York by train, that you have to have an off day.
Right.
And sleeping on those hot trains in the summertime in August with no air conditioning, they would appreciate the plane. The plane, you get down in there, it's air conditioned. You sit there in a nice, comfortable chair that you can go to sleep if you want. And the girl brings you a beer or a soft drink or a cocktail. It's a lot easier than it used to be when we were playing.
Oh, my. I remember Dutch Leonard I talked to him before he died, and he told me that when he was playing in Washington for Clark Griffith, that those train rides, no air conditioning, he says, he'd almost die. So he says, we went to him and said one time, we'll pay for the ice. They put ice in the big cues. First of all, he says, why don't you get them air conditioned? And Griffith says, oh, that's bad for players. That's bad for the pitcher's arm. You'll get a sore arm.
St. Louis, there was no air conditioning in the hotels.
That's right.
And you couldn't sleep.
But when they went to Griffith and said, we'll pay for the ice, he says, well, that's a good idea. How would you compare Judge Landis with the various commissioners that have followed him?
Well, again, here's one thing that it's just like trying to compare some of these fellows with Babe Ruth or some player. I think Landis, to me, was the greatest. And I think he was the greatest because he could afford to be that way. He didn't need the job.
Yeah.
I understand, I'm just quoting somebody else. I understand that at one time there was one of the owners complaining about the way he was handling things, and he just took his contract and tore it up in front of him. He says, if you're not satisfied with the way I'm doing things, he says, just get somebody else.
Great.
And everybody voted for him to stay.
Sure.
And that's the reason I think he was such a great man. And he was very conscientious and tried to keep away from trouble. He could foresee things coming.
Yeah.
And before that happened, he would call the player or the owner and would settle this thing before anything wrong would happen, which meant an awful lot.
Mm-hmm. And furthermore, he was brought in a time of desperation, and he was given powers that no commissioner since has had.
Well, he did a lot for baseball. I had a lot of admiration for him.
Glenn Wright, I think it was, told me that down at spring training one time, he was sitting in the stands and not playing, not suited up that day. And a fellow came and sat next to him, and very pleasant. They chatted, and the guy knew something about baseball. So the next morning, he gets a call to show up at Landis's office down there, where Landis was staying, in his hotel room. I think this was when they were still in spring training.
Oh, I see.
In the hotel where Landis was staying, and Landis said to him when he came in, what were you doing sitting next to Al Capone? Landis says, when did I sit next to him? The guy you were talking to in the stand yesterday. I didn't know he was Al Capone. Well, don't do it again.
He can foresee things, I'll say that for him.
Yeah. Who was the best right-handed hitter you ever saw?
Rogers Hornsby.
Everybody says that. How about the best left-handed hitter?
Well, now I think Ted Williams was as good as more compact and more more of a swinger. But I've seen a lot of good ones here. Paul Wiener was a great hitter.
Sure was.
Williams was so much bigger and so much stronger.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of good ones. Bill Terry was a great hitter.
Hello.
Time to eat.
You're having late breakfast.
Huh? Yeah.
I'm intruding.
This is my sister-in-law.
How you doing?
So happy to know you. How about the best right-handed pitcher?
Well, Jim, there's a lot of good ones. You see, Dizzy Dean and Dazzy Vance. I saw a little bit of Alexander when he was about through.
Yeah.
He was a great one.
Wasn't he?
Great one. And left-hander, I didn't play against Gould, but he was great, and so was Carl Hubbell.
Yeah. Although you've got probably...
There's so many that you could mention. I'd leave some of them out because...
Yeah, I know what you mean. Let me just ask two or three more, and then we'll pause for breakfast. Who was the best base runner you ever saw?
Best base runner I ever saw.
You didn't see Ty Cobb.
I saw the end of him. I didn't see him. Max Carey, I saw a little bit of him in the National League.
You'd have to be
at that time. Max Carey was the best in the National League.
Yeah.
We didn't have that much stealing. Kai Kyler was pretty good. He used to be with the Cubs, and I think he was on his own. I think McCarthy let him run whenever he wanted.
Yeah. Was Luis Aparicio as good as Max Carey?
Oh, Aparicio. I should think of Aparicio. I had him. Aparicio was great. We had him on his own. He used to do that.
Uh-huh.
I thought you was talking about ones I played against. But Aparicio.
In a sense, I was. Yeah.
Yeah. Aparicio was great.
How about the best outfielder?
Terry Moore was great.
Uh-huh. I talked with him too. Did you see Speaker?
No. I never did.
Okay. How about the best? Could you single out the best defensive player you ever saw in baseball?
That's defensive play. I think one of the best ones that I ever saw was a play that that Terry Moore made on me. I hit a blooper, I hit the ball on the handle with three men on in St. Louis with the bases loaded and two out, and he came in on a dead run and just dove at the ball with his bare hand and caught the ball barehanded. I don't see how he held the ball barehanded, but he made a tremendous play on that play there. And he used, and I understand they used to make them like that practically every day.
Yeah. He must have. Speaking of barehanded, Charlie Graham told me.
That was great. I've seen him do that.
He told me that some pitcher the Cubs had made a wild pickoff play, and he reached out and caught it barehanded.
Good English pitcher. Shortstop, and I've seen him, you know, throw wild. Of course, he threw one-handed like barehanded.
The pitcher threw over this time, and Charlie caught it one-handed. The pitcher got mad as hell. He says, "Here you are catching my best ball barehanded." could you pick out any one game that you think was the greatest game you ever watched?
One of the great games that wasn't a great game, but it was a great game for us, for Cleveland. We played the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, and we were playing them. This is when the Yankees were a powerhouse, and Reynolds was pitching against us, and he was one of the best pitchers in the league at that time, a great pitcher. And he was pitching against us, and they scored, I think, 7 runs in the very first inning against either Wynn or Lemon, one of the two.
Uh-huh.
And we had to take him out real quick the first inning. And I start bringing in the bullpen pitchers and pinch hitting, and the first thing you know, we're creeping up on them, and we finally ended up, in the 10th inning, we beat them 8-7. They didn't score a run or hit, got a base hit after the first inning, and we beat them 8-7 in New York in the Yankee Stadium. I think that was one of the most outstanding games I can ever remember, against Reynolds.
Yeah, of all things. I remember one, you were obviously managing the White Sox. We were there one evening, and they were playing the Yankees, and Eddie Robinson hit a home run in the first inning with a couple on, and got another hit. He drove in about 5 or 6 runs in the first 4 or 5 innings. Sox were leading, I think, like 6-0. And then they began to gain, the Yankees, as they always finished strong. And the 9th inning, the game would have ended, and was it Chichi Rodriguez? No, not Chichi Rodriguez, but something. Rodriguez at third base.
Yeah, I remember his name. He was booted, a Cuban boy.
Yeah, booted one and let a run in, bases still loaded. And it was, I guess, 6-6 or something like that. And Mickey Mantle came up, and he brought in Chuck Stobbs. And Mickey parked one in the seats and won the game. And I said to my two boys with me, I said, "Let's go home." That big lead didn't hold up. Who was the best umpire you ever saw, Rick?
Bill Clem.
Everybody says that, too. And the best game you ever had?
Best game I ever had, I think, was best game I ever had, I think, was in the Polo Grounds. I think it was the first game that I played in the Polo Grounds against the Giants at that time, which were the powerhouse. And I think I got 5 for 6 that day. We got to score a lot of runs.
Yeah, great.
Five hits, yeah, for me.
Why don't we take time out and you go have your breakfast, huh? What would you call your greatest thrill in baseball, Al?
That's a question that I have kids that write in all the time. I've had so many, that I would say thrills, like becoming a professional ball player was a thrill to me. I never thought I would be one.
Mm-hmm.
I played not high school because I didn't graduate from high school, but I played ball in school and played sandlot ball around Ybor City and was fortunate enough to be picked up by the local team here when I signed a contract when I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a thrill to me, and then to be bought by the Brooklyn Ball Club, Major League Club,
yeah.
was another dream that I never thought. And then to get to be able to play in the major leagues, I came home like I was riding in the clouds or something like that, to be the only Tampa boy that ever played in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And then after that, I played in All-Star games,
mm-hmm.
played, managed in World Series.
Yeah.
Manage all-star teams, and who could ask for any more thrills than that?
Not
and
right.
After all of that happened, then I became a Hall of Famer, which was another big thrill.
That tops it off.
That's right.
What was the best team you ever played on?
The best team?
Yeah.
That I played on?
Uh-huh.
I think I would have to say Brooklyn was the best team I played on.
Which
1930.
Year? 1930.
We finished fourth, but we were on top of it.
Yeah, you were leading, I think.
In first place.
Yeah.
We led most of the year year, but we at the end we got a couple of Johnny Fredericks got hurt. That hurt us an awful lot.
Yeah.
Pulled a hamstring muscle, and Rube Gressler broke a finger. He was our left fielder, and we were in bad shape after that.
Yeah. Okay. What is the best team you ever managed? The Cleveland 54 team?
Well, again, they were both good teams. I couldn't say which was. I say the Cleveland pitching staff was the best pitching staff I've ever seen on any club.
Yeah.
They were in Chicago, and Cleveland were both entirely different types of ball clubs. One was hard hitting, hot, good pitching, power hitting, and
mm-hmm.
Chicago was good pitching and
good defense,
speed and defense.
Yeah. Anyhow, do you remember any unusual, very strange, funny plays that happened?
I imagine that, at the time that it happened, it didn't seem strange or things that happened.
Well, what was the treatment that rookies got when you came up into the major leagues?
It wasn't all that bad. They talk about I didn't expect anything different than from what I got. I knew that I was going to be welcome, especially by whose position I was to go. But they treated me nicely, as nice as they could. Nobody was bad on me. And I think most everybody goes through that same procedure until you become one of the regular guys.
Yeah. 1930 was not only maybe the best team you played on, but statistic-wise, it was your best season, too.
It was my best season in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I hit 309, I think, that year.
Right. And you had some great teammates there. You had old Bobo Newsom just coming up at the same time, according to
Bobo belonged to Brooklyn at the same time that Mungo came up. Mungo
mm-hmm.
came up about the same time.
Right.
We had some good young pitchers from around that same area where Bobo and Mungo came through. We had three or four of them. Came from around that area.
How was Lefty O'Doul?
Lefty was one of the smartest hitters I ever saw. He was a great hitter and a smart hitter. He was a real smart hitter. He could figure things out pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And Hack was on his way down when you saw him.
Hack was with us a couple of years. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like you say, he was on his way down. The ball was not as lively as it was when he was. And I think that hurt. I think it hurt him more than any other one particular ball player.
Yeah, that's possible. You played with a lot of great names in different places where you went, no question about that. And in Pittsburgh you saw Rip Sewell.
Yeah, I caught Rip Sewell.
Was he throwing his blooper ball then?
7 years, yes. Yeah, he come up with that thing. He said he got the idea in the bullpen. He was in the bullpen, and he would be warming up, and finally the last ball he'd throw, he would lob it up like this, and I think that was the start of it.
The fact that he could do it so that it would come down over the plate as a strike was
really... That was the amazing part about it. It was just a lob ball, but he had such good control.
Mm-hmm. When you saw, when you had, I guess he was still there, Larry Doby.
Larry?
Was a pretty good hitter.
Larry should have been, not that should have been, he was a good ball player, but it should have been better yet. He was a fine ball player. But I think that Larry had so much pride in himself that he wanted to do better than what he did.
Yeah.
And he fought himself an awful lot. He was his worst enemy concerning, but he was a real good ball player on a good ball club. We had a good ball club at Cleveland, and he helped us an awful lot. But it's a shame because he could have been better if he didn't fight himself the way he did.
Yeah. After he came over to Chicago, I saw a doubleheader there one Sunday afternoon against the Yankees, whom we all hated vigorously. And in each game, in the first inning, he came up with two men on and bashed a home run, and it was all over in both games.
He had power. He'd had everything. He's a very proud man, Larry was, and his feelings were hurt very easily. And he tried so hard. I think he tried too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he hurt himself by doing so.
How about Minnie Minoso?
Minnie was a great guy on the club. Everybody liked him, and he was a good hustling ball player. Played every day, hurt or not. He didn't. He just played, and he was good. He was a good ball player on the ball club.
Yeah, Billy Pierce,
great pitcher.
Yeah,
real nice guy. I wish you know that I had, which I did. I had some great guys, but I wish I had 25 guys to manage like Billy Pierce.
That's great.
Because he didn't drink, didn't smoke, you didn't have to worry about a thing about it.
Was Jerry Staley, do you think he'd be, if he were like he was then, a good relief pitcher today, or have they advanced on that?
No, he'd be a good relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Jerry had a real good sinker ball it really sunk. The ball really sunk a lot, and he'd make you hit that ball on the ground.
Then you had Juan Pizarro for a while.
Juan Pizarro, one, was another guy like Larry, had tremendous ability, and was a moody fella. You know, I think he had one thing against him. He didn't speak the language too well, although he got to learn the language pretty good, but he had tremendous ability and should have been a lot better than what he was. He was a good, he pitched good for me. He had two or three good years for him.
And Gary Peters came up while you were there.
Gary came up, a great guy.
Yes.
And pitched good ball for me.
Joe Harlan too.
Joe Harlan.
Yeah. Did you expect John Romano to be a better catcher than he turned out to be?
John should have been better. He was a little bit on the lackadaisical side, nonchalant side, and if he'd have just been a little bit more aggressive, I think he'd have been a real fine catcher, a good hitter.
Sure,
good hitter power.
And Tommy John also came along.
Tommy John did a good job for us.
Yeah.
I think Tommy John should thank Ray Berries, because Ray Berries was really the one that helped Tommy John an awful lot.
How about old Bill Beck?
Bill Beck is a good friend, a great guy, and I wish he was back in baseball.
I think many people do, yeah. Yeah. Now, since you quit managing in 69, what have you been up to mostly? Just enjoying life down here?
Just enjoying life and playing golf as often as I can. I play four or five times a week.
Can't beat that.
No, pretty good.
Al, I thank you very much for chatting with me, and wish you a lot more chance to play a lot more golf and see a lot more baseball games.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.